Hello, this is Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. First of all, I'm not sure whether the sound here is very, very well. If not, then the station engineer should call me back and we can see what we can do. But I'm going to proceed as if it were until I hear otherwise. Okay, the topic today, of course, has to be the latest numbers that were just issued. Oh, okay, I hear we're fine. Okay, must be on my side. Let's just continue. The topic today is going to be the just issued second quarter U.S. GDP figures. Amazing. The economy collapsed. It's not a contraction. Second quarter is a virtual collapse, historic, never been as deep a contraction, collapse, as in the second quarter. That's April through June. How much? Well, all the media is reporting it. 32.9% collapse. Now, you got to understand, that's an annualized rate. In other words, the U.S. economy collapsed 10%, roughly, compared to the second quarter of the previous year, 2019, 10%. But if you annualize that, in other words, if you assume that that's going to continue, then it's a 33% contraction. Now, you also got to remember, we contracted 5% in the first quarter, and now 33% in the second quarter. And economists are saying, well, you know, the U.S. economy for the year, assuming some sort of recovery in the second half, assuming that, will probably be around 8 or 9% annual total contraction. That's assuming we're going to have a recovery. Now, we're going to talk about that because very clearly, there's not going to be much of a recovery in the third quarter, or probably the fourth as well. Okay, so GDP, remember GDP, there's three times in the year after each quarter, the government will release GDP figures. The first release yesterday is what's called preliminary GDP. At the end of August, they will release a second adjustment to that GDP, and usually that could be a significant change. And then later they will release a third adjustment, which is typically not much change. So, you know, we're looking at the preliminary GDP, but you know, the second revision or first revision to that preliminary GDP is not going to be very optimistic either. We'll see what that is, but right now, let's talk about the first GDP for the second quarter. Now, we knew it was going to be bad, but it really is a shocker. Really is. Very, very deep contraction. Unprecedented, really. Never before. Not even in the depths of the Great Depression did we have any quarter that collapsed 33%. Now, I've been arguing for quite some time, since March, this whole thing began, that what we got going on is not just a COVID-driven cyclical collapse of the economy. There are fundamental forces independent of the COVID effect, which are at work now, and they are expressing themselves, you know, more dramatically as time goes on. Structural changes that are occurring in the economy. Now, these structural changes were occurring even before, but now they're accelerated, you see. You got to think of the virus effect on the economy, which is significant, as something that precipitated and accelerated the contraction, but it was already underway in some sectors of the economy and at the verge already in other sectors of the economy. So think about deeper, longer-term structural changes accelerating as a result of the effect of COVID, which has its own effect on the economy because it shut down a lot of the economy there, in especially March, April, early May. Keep in mind, too, that this 33% contraction in the second quarter includes the period of the reopening of the economy that began in May in some states, actually, and now those are the states, of course, you see the worst COVID second wave, mostly in the South. It includes the reopening of the economy that pretty much was everywhere by June, middle June, and into early July. Well, that's not in these numbers yet. That's in there. That's with a rebound. Economic rebound in May, June. 32.9% is with that rebound. 32.9% is also inclusive of the stimulus that was injected into the economy in March, April. That's what was called the CARES Act, and some supplements to that passed in April, the CARES Act. Remember, they say, well, you hear them, it's between $2.2 trillion, sometimes they report it, sometimes reported as $3 trillion. Well, as we said many times, that act is really only $1.1 trillion of actual stimulus injected into the economy. You know, there's the $500 billion unemployment insurance provisions, plus moratoria on evictions for about 40% of the rental properties in the U.S., plus some money for hospitals and testing and so forth, a couple hundred billion, various programs, and the PPP program, which is the Small Business Rescue Program, which was originally $350 billion, but then they had to expand it, you know, with another $310 billion because big businesses were stealing a lot of it. That's a whole topic in and of itself. You know, how the bailout has been gamed and stolen. And it has. But the point is, only $1.1 trillion, you know, the $500 billion unemployment and checks and so forth, plus the, well, last I heard, $500 billion of the $660 billion had been $1 trillion. A couple hundred billion for hospitals and so forth, $1.3 trillion. That's all that's really gotten into the economy, you see. It's not the $2.2 trillion, you know, or the $3 trillion, because the difference between the actual money that got into the economy in the second quarter and the $3 trillion or $2.2 trillion is $1 trillion in loans to medium-sized and big businesses. And medium are pretty big. You know, medium, I think it's 15,000 employees or something. Huge number. And big corporations, of course, we're talking guys with hundreds of billions of dollars of revenue every year and hundreds of thousands of employees. Well, they haven't taken up those loans at all. No. Over $1 trillion of loans sitting out there for them to take up and spend, invest, hire people, make stuff. No, they're not taking it. That's never gotten into the economy yet, you see. That's not a stimulus that actually stimulated anything. It's just sitting there on paper. And there's a parallel, similar development going on with the Federal Reserve, the central bank, which introduced 11 special lending facilities over in addition to the $3 trillion now. Yeah, there's this bailout going on by the Fed of the banks, and not just the banks now, but of corporations, medium and large such corporations. And how's that fared? Not much difference. They've hardly borrowed anything from the Fed. I've seen like a couple hundred billion, 100, 150 billion maybe of the 3 trillion that the Fed has put up. You know, we talked about that before, why they're not. They're fat with cash. That's why the medium and large corporations are sitting on a mountain of cash, over $3 trillion of dollars. If you look in the second quarter, business deposits just in commercial banks in the U.S., $2.2 trillion. And that's not because they borrowed the money under these programs from the Fed or CARES Act. No, no. That comes because they've issued all kinds of corporate bonds, over $1.5 trillion in corporate bond issuance, and borrowed their credit lines from the banks, loans, in this case, and other sources, you know, suspender dividend payouts and everything. And, you know, they've accumulated this huge cash hoard just in the U.S., $2.2 trillion. Who knows how much more that they've put aside in their offshore subsidiaries? Or instead of cash, you know, invested in short-term securities like stocks and tech companies. Yeah. That they can draw on quickly anytime. You know, there's maybe $5 trillion of U.S. large, medium corporations sitting on a trove of $5 trillion, $3 to $5 trillion for sure. They don't need that money from the Fed. They don't need that money from Congress. It's sitting there. It's an emergency if they have to. I think the only company really is drawn on that a little bit are the airlines. Oh, but are the airlines using that money to keep their workers employed? No. United has announced, 36,000 layoffs coming? American, 20,000? This is part of this wave of permanent layoffs by big corporations as they batten down the hatches because they know this thing, this contraction, this recession, great recession, is going to go on for some time, as all great recessions do. Never have a V-shaped recovery in a great recession. There have been two other great recessions, well, three actually, in the last 100 years in this country. The first was the 1907-13 Great Recession. Big contraction following a financial crash in 1907. And then the economy bounced along the bottom because there wasn't sufficient fiscal or monetary stimulus. What does bouncing along the bottom mean from 1908 to 13? What does it mean? It means short, shallow recoveries followed by relapses and contractions again, followed by short, shallow recoveries bouncing along the bottom for years until we got a massive fiscal stimulus, which was World War I. And then, of course, we had 1929-30. Yes, the beginning of the Great Depression was a Great Recession. It really only affected initially what was going on in manufacturing and construction. You see, even before the October 29 stock market crash, the economy, the real economy, the goods economy, manufacturing and construction was already contracting. What happened with the financial crash in October, the stock market, was it accelerated and deepened all this. Oh, just like the virus accelerated and deepened the contraction. The virus is playing the historical economic role of a financial crash. Very similar. Except there's no financial crash yet in the U.S. And it wasn't until you had a series of 4 banking crashes in the U.S. in 1930, 31, 32, 33, that we actually went into a deep depression. So you got to have financial crashes, you see, to drag a great recession into a bona fide depression. But we haven't had the financial crash yet. I say yet, because if the defaults, household and consumer and business defaults, continue to grow throughout the rest of this year, we may very well have a financial crisis in 2021. We'll see. But the banks are fat with cash, just like big corporations. You know, they might be able to weather that. Look, the folks that are really taking it on the chin here with this great recession, this 2020, are workers and small business people. And it's the minority small business people and workers who are really taking it on the chin. The rest of them are doing all right. Maybe that's why McConnell and his Republican buddies aren't in any great hurry to throw more money at workers and small business. Or throw just a little. They'll agree to it, but not much. It won't be enough, you see. And of course, the third great recession was 2008-09. That was precipitated by a financial crash, of course, in 2008. In the housing and derivatives, financial derivatives sectors of the economy, caused a contagion across the credit system and it all froze up. Okay, so we have three cases of great recessions. This is the fourth, by the way, and it's much worse than 2008-09. The contraction is about three times worse and three times faster. You know, in the worst months of the Great Recession of 2008-09, we had about 650,000 unemployed, new unemployed every month. Well, we've been running at over 2 million for 19 consecutive weeks now. And as we'll point out, in the last two or three weeks, that number is going up again. Not going down. It's never been less than 2 million. Look, you hear this, whoa, 1.2 million filing new unemployment claims. As I've said, you know, tiresome. I get tired of hearing myself say this. That's only a partial picture, and the media cherry picks the best statistic they can to make it look is not as bad as it really is, because the actual number of new unemployment claims is probably 2.3, 2.4 million every week. That's unemployment claims. That doesn't count people who are running out of their unemployment at the other end, or people who are trying to get it and haven't really been able to get it yet, or people who have dropped out of the labor force by the millions aren't getting unemployment. You see, you can't confuse unemployment claims with unemployed. The latter number is always much greater. And so we have, what, 30, 32 million people on unemployment claims? The actual number is probably about 40 million people jobless. And now they're talking about taking away the supplemental unemployment benefits. You see, there's two unemployment benefit systems. There's the state system. That's the 1.4 million claims a week, new claims. But then there's this supplemental pandemic unemployment federal system. And that's, you know, covering contract workers and independent contractors and gig workers and so forth. That's been almost 1,900,000 to 1 million every week, new claims going on. So it's really like well over 2 million a week. That is reflective of a great recession, you see. It takes a long time to stop the bleeding of jobs and to restore those jobs, a long time. Okay, so in the second quarter here, we have this collapse of 33%. In real terms, that's over $2 trillion of GDP wiped out in 6 months. $2 trillion, yeah. In the fourth quarter of this past year, looking at the government commerce numbers, U.S. GDP, seasonally adjusted here, annual rate, $19.2 trillion in the fourth quarter. $19.2 trillion. But a end of June, $17.2 trillion. In other words, $2 trillion wiped out. Now, $1.5 trillion of that is consumer spending collapse from $13.3 trillion in the fourth quarter of 19 down to $11.8 here in the second quarter. So the big collapse is the consumer. Ah, but it's not just the consumer, folks. It's business investment as well. What do I mean by business investment? I don't mean investing in stocks and bonds. I mean investing in business equipment, you know, machinery and computers and equipment and transport equipment and so forth, or business structures, meaning offices, buildings, facilities, you know, building hotels and malls, resorts, factories, office buildings. That's what we call non-residential structures. Both of those have collapsed here in 6 months. And it would be really worse. These numbers of business investment collapse, you know, about $600 billion in 6 months. It would be, really be worse if we didn't prop up those business investment numbers with what's called intellectual property products. You see, this was introduced in 2013 to boost the long-term decline in business investment in the U.S. Not business investment offshore, in the U.S., you see, slowly declining structurally. So they redefined GDP, and they added in 2013, retroactively and going forward, this category called intellectual product. What the hell is that? Well, what's the value of a company logo or a trademark? Are these various, quote, value elements of a corporation? You know, how much did the value of their trademark increase over the year? They add that to GDP. Now, that's pretty phony because all the government says to the company, to Nike, well, what do you think the value of your logo is, Nike? And Nike says, oh, we think it went up 10%. Oh, okay, we'll put that in GDP. Lots of games go on with GDP. I mean, you really got to get into it as an economist and look behind it and so forth. Here's another game. You know what else goes in GDP? The value of the rent that homeowners pay themselves. Yeah. You say, well, if you got a home, you're paying a mortgage, you know, you're paying yourself a rent. What an oxymoron idea. But that's how they boost it, you know. They, different ways, they support GDP. Well, you know, they made this wholesale change in 2013, redefined GDP, intellectual property, products, and added $900 billion to GDP. Yeah. Fourth quarter. Last year, intellectual property products were $985 billion. Almost $1 trillion of the $19 trillion GDP. Take that away and, wow, we've been in a recession for 10 years. Yeah. Take it away. And we would have had a double, maybe even a triple dip recession after 2008-9 if it wasn't for that change in the definition and inclusion of that questionable category, intellectual property, in the calculation of GDP. I guess my point is, you know, the $2 trillion collapse in the last 6 months in U.S. GDP would be closer to $3 trillion if we didn't have a lot of phony stuff in this thing called intellectual property. Now, some of it is software and so forth, you know, but a lot of it is logos and, you know, trademarks and a lot of phony stuff. But, you know, the U.S. does that. You know, when they got a problem, they defined it away. Well, not just the U.S. A lot of countries do that. Well, they tinker with the definition of their GDP when things get bad. Yeah, in Europe, what do they do in Europe? Some countries in Europe, right? Drug smuggling and prostitution are considered services included in GDP. They just make up a number. Yeah, India is even worse. Okay, I've talked about this before, but these are the limits of GDP. But even given the limits and the phony boosting of GDP in various ways, we still got a $2 trillion contraction in the first half of this year. $1.5 trillion of which is consumer spending, and $600 billion of which is business investment, even with $985 billion in intellectual property. Still a $600 billion contraction. Now, when you have recessions like this, you know, you think that the government would step in and fill this gap. That's what they're supposed to do. But if you look at government spending at the federal level, only $50 billion increased spending over the last 6 months. Now, don't confuse that with government bailouts. These are transfer payments. You know, this is not government spending. You know, only $58 billion increase from fourth quarter through the second quarter. And state and local government, actually contraction. So government needs to step up when you have this huge contraction in consumption and investment by business, but it's not doing it. I mean, Trump could have boosted GDP by setting up federal production corporations to mass produce the physical protection equipment and incubators and all the rest, testing and so forth. Yeah, he could have done that. Well, it would have increased government spending and boosted GDP. But he'd rather give billions of dollars up front to drug companies in the hopes that they'll develop some kind of a virus. Yeah, up front. Right. What he should do is set up a government pharmaceutical production company and research company, maybe out of the NIH and whatever, and compete with these private companies. Do you think that they wouldn't jump in and spend money then? Yes, they would. They wouldn't want the government to corner the virus vaccine market. They would spend. They wouldn't sit on it and hoard it. Okay, another thing that's funny about GDP is that if this category called net exports, what is that? That's the difference between exports and imports. Exports that the U.S. produces here and sells abroad. Imports, what consumers buy from what was produced abroad. And the way they do GDP is that, you know, if you have a greater increase in imports than you have in exports, you get a negative GDP number. Negative. Well, what's the net exports here from fourth quarter 19 to present? Well, we had a negative net exports in the fourth quarter of 19 of $861 billion. That's declined to $780 billion. This is a deficit, folks, right? In the second quarter. But by reducing the this deficit in net exports, you're actually increasing GDP. And I'm going to go into a lot of that explanation, but that's the assumption. That's what they make, right? Okay. So in other words, it would be really even worse if we didn't do that. GDP fourth quarter. The bottom line and the point I'm trying to make is that this massive contraction is actually worse than what they're even saying. Yeah, it's actually worse. Because the CARES Act and the rebound, right, are in those numbers, are in the 32.9% decline. They're in the numbers. You know, just imagine, well, you know, I said we only spend actually about $1.3 trillion of the $3 trillion so-called on the books. But if we hadn't, you know, that's about 5% of 5.5% of GDP. If we hadn't, then the 32.9% would really be almost 40% if we hadn't had that mitigation. You see, that wasn't really a bill. That was a mitigation, and they called it a mitigation. It was put a floor under, keep the collapse from going further than it would otherwise have gone. So it would have been a 40% collapse if it wasn't for the CARES Act. You see, the CARES Act mitigated some of that 32.9%. And it would be even more than a $2 trillion collapse of GDP. Probably 2.3, 2.5 trillion. Even worse. Okay. Now, there are four myths about this whole recession here. I've been talking about one of them from time to time, and now the data is pretty much confirming. First myth, what? Oh, we're going to have a V-shaped recovery. You know, back in March, that was really the message being put out by the Trump administration and the business media press, and a lot of economists were buying into it at the time. Saying, oh, well, this is just a health-related thing, and when the health crisis is over, pop, there goes the economy, right back to where we were. Yeah, that's what they were saying. Even the liberals, mainstream economists, were saying that. It's because they see this as only a health-related thing. No, I see this as a health crisis accelerating and precipitating a crisis we already were falling into. We're already on the cusp of the recession. In some cases, it was already here in 2019. If you look at 2019, business investment was already contracting in 2019. Fourth quarter 2019, business investment was down 0.3%. First quarter of 2020 here collapsed to -6.7%. And then, of course, in the second quarter, 27% further collapse. So we were already collapsing in terms of business investment, a key part of the economy, because that's where jobs are created, you see. Consumer spending. Oh, last year, oh, the consumer was holding everything up, barely. Oh, but Trump was saying, oh, it's the consumer's doing so good and so great. Well, look at the fourth quarter, 2019. Consumer spending increasing only at a 1.6% rate. 1.6%. That's, and that's the holiday quarter, right? That's when consumers really come out and spend. Only 1.6%. That's almost stagnation. So business spending collapsing, consumer spending stagnant before any of this actually happened here in 2020. In the first quarter, business consumption fell -6.9%. Just about the same as business investment, -6.7%, remember? Well, then it really collapsed in the second quarter, almost 35% collapse. Second quarter, business investment, 27% collapse. Consumption, 35% collapse. And you add consumption and business investment, that's 80% of the economy's activity, those two. 80%. The rest is government, which didn't change much, as I said, and net exports, which looks good because you're just buying less foreign goods than you're selling your goods to foreign countries. Well, if the consumers are buying less foreign goods, imports going down, it's because they don't have the money, you see. So that's not a positive indicator, but they claim it is. Okay. So my March predictions that we would have a W-shaped recovery is pretty much coming true as well. The data and the facts are now coming out. Let's take a look at them, okay? Second quarter, first quarter GDP down 32.9% first quarter, right? And then we started this rebound in late May, June. But by mid-July, the data are now showing, just coming in, that this is stalling out. This snapback V-shape is stalling out. There's a relapse underway. Relapse is a reversal of the rebound. You see, it wasn't a recovery in June. It was a rebound as he opened up the economy. A rebound is not a recovery. Okay, so what are the indicators here of a relapse going on? Well, first of all, you got the rising unemployment claims that we're talking about last 3 weeks. You know, from just over 2 million to 2.4 million. 2.4 million going on right now. New claims every week. Remember, back in 2008-09, the worst was 650,000 a month. This is like almost four times every week, 19 weeks in a row. Is that a predictor of recovery? I don't think so. The CARES Act in March is spent or being hoarded. It's spent. No more stimulus from the CARES Act. Okay. We're beginning to hear permanent layoff announcements by big corporations across the board. We're going to hear more of them. That's over and above the COVID effect. The COVID effect is more of a short-term cyclical effect. But these other things are long-term. Look, you know, whenever you have a contraction, business figures out ways to cut costs. They lay people off. You know, they tighten their belts, they batten down the hatches, and they figure ways that they can operate on less. And then when the recovery is over, they just keep those new ways of operating going because it's saving them money, costs. And they hire back very, very slowly, or they hire back people temporarily. Part-time, a lot of part-time. You see, a lot of when the opening of the economy in May and June, a lot of the people came back only part-time at less hours of work and therefore less weekly income to spend. So, you know, if you look at the second COVID wave on top of this now happening, with the permanent job announcements coming from big corporations, the CARES Act expiring, unemployment claims rising, state and local governments warning that come August, if there is no further rescue of state and local governments, and they need about $900 billion because of the rising cost and falling revenues, tax revenues, that they're going to start laying off big time too. Yes, state and local governments are going to lay off. They're going to join the permanent layoff wave of big corporations, right? Corporations are not increasing investment or hiring. It's not going on. As I mentioned, it's being hoarded. Yeah, $2.2 trillion in commercial bank deposits increased. By the way, you got a hoarding going on by households too. Household disposable income, which is normally about disposable income 3.5%, increased 42% in the second quarter. Usually increases like 3.5% a quarter, up 42%. Savings rate, normally household savings rate, normally around 7-8%, 25.7%. People are saving. They're not spending. Well, part of that is because they couldn't go out to spend, right? But part of it is they're afraid. You know, they're beginning to realize this thing is not ending tomorrow and could get worse. And the same thing with business. You know, expectations. We're talking about expectations of where things are going. And that can freeze people up as far as their spending is concerned or their investing is concerned. If businesses think their expectations of the future, near future, is people aren't going to come back and buy a lot, well, they're not going to expand. They're not going to invest. In fact, they're going to do the opposite and lay people off. Expectations are extremely important, psychological expectations in economics, in the economy, both business and households. And that's really very negative right now. You can see this in the very latest consumer confidence statistics just released, University of Michigan, the primary consumer confidence survey. In March, it reached pandemic historic lows of 72.5. What that means is that if it's under 100, that means people are very negative and not going to spend, most likely. If it's over 100, then they're very positive, very optimistic, and they're going to spend. Well, it hit a low in March of 72.5, way below 100, right? What was it in June while we had the rebound? Consumer confidence. Oh, it had risen to 73.2. 0.7% increase. People were going back to work, but they were very uncertain and very negative and very much afraid. If you're afraid, you're going to hoard your money. You're going to hoard your cash for a rainy day, for emergencies, right? Another consumer confidence indicator reflecting people weren't all that positive about where the economy was going. 6 months expectations, in other words, it's called. What was it in June? 65.9. Getting worse. People are afraid. They're afraid to spend, you see. What that means is if you want to get a stimulus, you got to target that stimulus to people who have to spend. Can't save. Well, that's the unemployed, right? And if business won't hire them, at some point, the government must start hiring them. Well, state and local governments are afraid to hire because they're losing money now. And unlike the federal government, they got to balance a budget, you see. Their revenues are collapsing. And their costs are rising to dealing with the pandemic. I saw a study back in May that said state and local government is going to need $969 billion through 2021 to be rescued here and to continue the work they're doing. Well, Trump has said, okay, you states, you take care of all this, but he's not throwing any money their way. No, neither is McConnell. McConnell doesn't want to bail out the states and cities, because most of the bailout are in the big urban areas and they're blue. That's why. And because McConnell and Republicans really only care about their big corporation buddies that pay for their campaigns. And they're fat, right? They're fat. They don't need any more. They're not even taking off the table what's been offered to them. So McConnell sees, you know, the state city bailouts is really helping the Democrats. And, well, he doesn't have a history of doing that, does he? No. Well, that's my analysis of why he doesn't want to do that. Well, the other part is what you got going on now in Congress is the Republicans are split, aren't they? They don't want to spend more than a trillion more. Trillions are dropping the bucket, especially if there's tax cuts in there, which there is, and throwing money at defense companies. You know, the original CARES Act in March threw, what, $20 billion at defense companies? Who didn't need a penny? I mean, no one's stopping buying jet aircraft from them or anything else. Military spending's going up. What do they need $20 billion for? You know, record corporate profits for these guys. Talk about cash hoards. They got it. Oh, but, you know, in the latest Republican McConnell proposal, counterproposal here to the Democrats, which is called the HEALS Act, H-E-A-L-S, HEALS Act. This is their $1 trillion counter to the Democrats' HEROES Act, $3.5 trillion. That was proposed back in June, sitting on a table, right? Republicans only want to spend $1 trillion. There's another $30 billion for the defense companies. So we will have given them $50 billion. What the hell do they need it for? They just approved the $760 billion Pentagon bill, act, appropriations, $760 billion. That doesn't slow down. And, you know, all these Republicans who were against spending more than the HEALS Act, Rand Paul and John Kennedy, Louisiana, and all these southern dinosaurs, you know. Oh, they're ranting and raving. Oh, we'll raise the deficit too much. We've already raised it too much. We can't afford to raise the deficit and the debt. Well, they didn't say a damn thing when they signed off within 2 days. The Defense Pentagon Act didn't say a thing, nor did it say anything last year when $429 billion in new tax business investor loopholes was provided, $429 billion last year, nor did they say anything about the $650 billion in tax cuts in the CARES Act in March. Oh, now all of a sudden it's a problem. Oh, but it's not a problem for the defense companies, you see. We'll give them whatever they need. Even if they don't need it, we'll give them some. Okay, back to this topic of why there's a relapse coming. Or is coming, is underway. Indicators rising, just to recap here, rising unemployment claims, right? Consumer confidence collapsing, CARES Act expiring, mass layoffs being announced, second COVID wave underway, and shutdowns. State and local governments warning they will join the layoffs soon. Right. Corporations sitting on their hoard, not investing. Consumer confidence continuing to decline. And Congress dithering. Dithering. Also, you won't see a recovery and a relapse because the rest of the world economy is in as bad a shape almost as the U.S. Yeah, they just announced numbers here, GDP for Europe. Germany, what, 8%, 10%? 10% collapse? Just like the U.S., right? Germany depends on exports and trades, and the global economy is contracting. 50% of Germany's GDP is trade. Exports of manufactured goods, machine goods, and so forth. Well, no one's buying. Everyone's in recession. Even China, which pulled up the global economy after 2009 by spending big time and pulling up commodity-producing countries, economies around the world, that mitigated the global collapse because it recovered global trade, which offset some of the domestic collapse. But that's not happening now. You see, they're all in recession everywhere. Spain, France, Italy announcing 12 to 18% annual GDP collapse, worse than even Germany. The same is all over. So no foreign offset, economic offset here in the second half for this relapse of the U.S. And then there are two wild cards, I would say. Two wild cards. What are they? U.S. political system instability. It's getting worse. Yeah, Trump just said he wants to postpone the election in November. I mean, in the middle of the Civil War, with the country split, we held elections, at least in the North. He wants to postpone it. Hey, even the Federalist Society, the ultra-conservative Federalist Society, director came out today and said he ought to be impeached for that. And now, you know, this was a society very influential, by the way, in Washington, conservative circles, in policy, particularly selecting judges. This is the same society that really criticized the Democrats going after Trump impeachment based upon the Mueller case, now comes out a day after and says, well, we should impeach this guy again. You know, just think how lucky we are having Donald Trump. I mean, if this guy wasn't so stupid, and if he didn't have such a big mouth and a bigger foot he keeps putting into it, think how dangerous he would really be. I mean, we're lucky we got Donald Trump. Yeah. Or we're lucky Donald Trump is really an intellectual doofus. Okay. All right, so a second myth here, you know, the myth of snapback, V-shaped recovery. Second myth I want to conclude, gee, I'm running out of time here, is this, that the U.S. economy was strong before this whole thing happened here with the virus. It was strong. Well, I've kind of talked about that a little bit already. But let's look at it. Consumer spending throughout 2019 was rising only 0.1% a month, only $300 billion difference between fourth quarter 18 and fourth quarter 19 in total consumer spending. $300 billion. No, there was $20, $25 billion a month. That's nothing. It was stagnant. What about business investment throughout 2019? It was contracting. It was contracting. Hey, look, just go look at the table 1.1.6 of the U.S. gross, real gross domestic product, real GDP of the Bureau of Economic Affairs, U.S. government agency that does the GDP stuff, right? Billions of dollars and 2012 dollars, which is the base year, right? Seasonally adjusted annual rates, right? Go look at those numbers. And what do you see? in 2018-19 throughout the whole year. As I said, only $300 billion increase in consumer spending, negative in business investment, contracting throughout the year. Business and equipment investment, negative, contracting throughout the year. Housing, residential housing, virtually no change, stagnant as well. This economy was on the cusp, ready for a contraction. Now, it probably would have been more of a mild contraction that they could have dealt with easier than they're doing now. But on top of this, here comes the virus and drives it deep, deep, fast and deep. So this second myth that the U.S. economy was great and that we're going to V-shape back to that great new normal is also just nonsense. Or that consumers were doing great. Look at the personal income. Look at, you know, for those on wages. Flat. People were spending based on credit cards. You know. And other debt-laden forms of spending. Consumers were not so great. Right? And then, of course, the third myth here is that the $3 trillion spent in March with the CARES Act was good enough. Let's not spend anymore. Let's just wait. Well, you see what's happening now that you're waiting? It wasn't $3 trillion. By the way, $2.2 trillion plus $650 billion in tax cuts for businesses and investors, only 1% of which went to people earning $100,000 a year or less. So it's all up there for the wealthy. In the March CARES Act. Tax cuts do not stimulate investment and economic activity in contractions like this. Neither do low interest rates. You can't get business to invest simply by reducing their costs if they see that they can't make profits by producing. It doesn't matter what the cost of production is. If you can't realize revenue, sales, and profits, they're not stupid. They know this. Okay, so those are the three big myths going on right now. V-shaped snapback recovery, right? U.S. economy was strong before all this, and we really don't need to spend anymore because we spent enough, which is really not enough because a lot of it's being hoarded. And that's the picture mid-year here with regard to the U.S. economy and what's ahead, and watch out, because the two big wild cards are political instability and a financial crisis in 2021. And if either of those happen, and they are quite possible, then we are in a Great Depression a la 1930.